Today is February 17th, Sunday morning. We are beginning the second Mishnah of the sixth Perek in Masechet Brachot. We'll read through the Mishnah. In the case of this Mishnah, it's especially important to remember something that we always remember, which is that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the editor of the Mishnah, did not divide the Mishnayot into separate Mishnayot. He divided this material into Prakim, but not the separate Mishnayot, which means the division we have into Mishnah Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, etc. is, to a certain sense, later and artificial. And it's good to always remember that, especially in our case, to see Mishnah Bet in light of Mishnah Aleph as the continuation of Mishnah Aleph, not separated from Mishnah Aleph.
Who did that division?
It was done on different levels. First of all, when the Gemara came to explain the Mishnah, the Gemara divided the Prakim into certain divisions. If you look in the Talmud Bavli, it takes part of the Perek, explains it. Part of the Perek explains it. If you compare the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, you see sometimes, rarely, but it does happen, that they divide it differently. And then when you see manuscripts of Mishnah that are not Gemara, but just Mishnah, also there, it's sometimes divided differently than the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. And different manuscripts of the Mishnah sometimes divided differently. So there are a lot of different divisions. It's hard to say there's an authoritative division. We accept the problem of Bavli more than the Yerushalmi, so that could be called the accepted division.
Why would the Mishnah only, why would it divide it at all? Why not just lump everything together?
You mean why would the Talmud divide it for the Gemara purposes?
No, I can understand why they're just wanting to discuss pieces, but if somebody's just printing a Mishnah to distribute or hand anyone, why divide it all when it's
right?
Leave it
so
as one.
Sometimes just for convenience, for help in citation, you know, what Mishnah are we talking about? So they divide it up. But I'll add that there are prakim of Gemara that didn't divide the Mishnah at all. They printed all at the beginning, and then print all the Gemara for any given perek. That happens once in Masechet Brachot. Masechet Brachot, when the Talmud Bavli prints the last perek of Brachot, the ninth chapter, it prints the whole thing and then gives the Gemara.
There have been occasions when the text that you've been using to hand out to us, the divisions don't conform with
the Art School.
Vilna. Well, I think it's from the Art School, but it's the Vilna edition of the pages.
Just
this is just Mishnah, but it breaks them out. And the Mishnahs aren't the same. There are two here and one there, or vice versa.
So there really is no what we would call authoritative division, and sometimes it's a matter of parshanut, of interpretation. Okay, so reading our Mishnah, it says, "Beirach al peirot eilan borei pri adama yatsa, val peirot haaretz borei pri haetz lo yatsa, al kulam imamar shakol nieh bidvaro yatsa." Pretty straightforward. So we'll just go through the questions of the question sheet, and then we'll go on to the Talmudic sources. So the first question I asked, going to the question sheet, was in what tense does the root bet resh chaf appear? And of course it's in the past tense. It would be mivarech in the present, and it would be yivarech in the future. Whereas what we have here is beirach, which means past tense. And given that it's past tense, we come to the second question, which is we're talking here about bedi'avad. In other words, it's not telling you what you should do. It's telling you if you did such and such, yatsa yedei chova, or lo yatsa yedei chova. And when I say the expression yatsa yedei chova, I'm of course using the complete form of the expression found in our Mishnah, yatsa. Yatsa means yatsa yedei chova, and lo yatsa means lo yatsa yedei chova.
The Mishnah is not accepted or not accepted.
Right. The Mishnah is not talking about what you should do, but what you can do in a worst case scenario, such that you won't have to repeat. Right. That's the answer to another question on the sheet. What does it mean, halakha lamaaseh, practically speaking, what does it mean, question five, what's the practical halakha ramification of the ruling yatsa? It's that you don't have to repeat. Whereas when it says lo yatsa, the practical ramification is that you have to repeat a new bracha.
The right bracha.
Okay. Just let's make sure we know those words that I just used of yatsa yedei chova, so that I have written here. lo yatsa and lo yatsa, yedei chova, which literally means went forth of the hands of obligation, means fulfilled. Yatsa yedei chova, and lo yatsa is lo yatsa yedei chova, didn't go forth of the hands of obligation. I also used here the phrase bidiavad, which is Aramaic, bidiavad, in that was done. Avad in Hebrew would be asa. Bidiavad would be bisha asa, in that he did. If you did it already, is it good enough or not? So the answer, when we say again, yatsai dei chova, we mean to say that bidiavad, it was good enough. After the fact, and it was already done. Whereas if I wasn't asking the question of birech, X, Y, and Z, yatsa or lo yatsa, but I was saying, what do you mivarech? What do you have to say? You didn't say anything yet. That's a question of lichatchila, to begin with, from the root of hatchala. What do you have to say? Lachatchila, what's the halacha? So the halacha, if you have to say a bracha over an eitz, over an apple, the halacha lechatchila is brei pri eitz. But bediavad, im berech al hadama, yatsa. I wouldn't tell you to do it lechatchila, but bediavad, yatsa. And the third phrase that we've talked about in the context of bediavad lechatchila, the third phrase you have to know is b'shat hadchak, at the hour of urgency. B'shat hadchak, the hour of emergency. For example, what happens if I have in front of me a fruit and I don't know if it grows on eitz or on the adama, or I don't know the halacha of raspberries or strawberries? So in many cases, and in our case also, the halacha, b'shat hadchak, an hour of urgency, in other words, I don't know what to do, it's lechatchila, in the sense I didn't do anything yet. But very often the halacha, b'shat hadchak, is the same halacha as b'diavad. So in other words, if I know that if I have in front of me something that's eitz, but I made a mistake and said adama, I know that b'diavad yatsa, then the same thing goes for b'shat hadchak. If I know that it's either Eitz or Adama, but it's Shat Atak, I have a problem, an hour of problem, and I know that I don't know which it is, so if I know that if I had said the wrong bracha, I would be Yotze B'diavad, so in that case I can just say, ah, I'll say the more inclusive bracha, even though it might not be the right one, so I know B'diavad Yetza, then I'll say it. I don't know if it's Eitz, I don't know if it's Adama, so I'll say the one over Adama. It's better to figure out what the fruit is, but if I can't, I'll say Adama, and then B'shat Adchak, that's B'seder, that's okay.
It's accepted.
It's accepted. That's acceptable, even though I didn't do it yet. Let's see, so now we go down to question 6. What would be the botanical logic between this halachic ruling that yatsa, so that I basically hinted at 1 minute ago, we know that every eitz also grows on the adama. So botanically, it describes the situation, and yatsa the opposite. It's not the case. Everything that grows on the ground doesn't necessarily grow on a tree. So if I have something, as the Mishnah says, that grows on the ground, and I say eitz, then lo yatsa, even b'diavad. Right. Okay. And then we'll go to question 10, which is very, very simple. What word is assumed but not written before the words al peirot ha'aretz? Everyone together? Yeah. Question 10. If it's such an easy question, I thought I wouldn't say the answer. I just ask everyone for the answer. Right. The Mishnah, it's so easy that you probably didn't even notice. But it helps to notice that the Mishnah saves words as much as possible. And it means to say, Berech al peirot ha'aretz. But it left out the word because it's assumed.
Instead of peirot, they say adomo.
You made a mistake. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Of course. Question 12, is what we just talked about, Peshat HaTchaknas. Question 12 says, is there any Latchila Halacha that might be learned from the first two rulings of the Mishnah? And the Latchila Halacha is the Halacha Peshat HaTchak. In other words, if you have in front of you something you don't know, if it's Eitzer Adama, since you know that had it been Eitz and you said Adama, you would have been Yatzah, but had it been Adama and you said Eitz, it wouldn't have been Yatzah, so then you know that Peshat HaTchak, you'd say the more inclusive Bracha.
You can always fall back on
Adama. Right.
It seems like also, I mean, I was thinking that if you have an apple and some lettuce, then you have to say the apple first. Or you should say the apple first.
And not only that, but they each require a separate bracha, don't think.
Right, but I mean, what I meant, yes.
Okay.
Well, they require them, because what David pointed out before was that if you said Hadama, you could theoretically at least have covered both, and then it would be problematic to go back and...
That's true.
Why you should say Hayitz first.
Right. In other words, if you had in front of you the lettuce and the Eitz, the apple, and when you said the bracha on the lettuce, you meant to cover the apple, well, since you did it, it works. But diavad, but you shouldn't have done that.
You're not allowed to go on and say the Hayitz now, because
right.
it'd be...
Right, it would be a bracha sheinat tzracha, not necessary bracha. That's a good point. Right. Okay, so then we get to the last three questions, 13, 14, and 15. What can we deduce from this Mishnah as far as the accepted halachic ruling and the disagreement in the previous Mishnah? What's the answer to that?
Rabbi Yehuda's rule is not accepted.
Okay. There's no special bracha on Brei Minei Tisha'im. It's only Adaman Eitz that we're working with. And 14, what doubt might legitimately exist concerning the types of foods included by the word kulam? In the last part of our Mishnah, when it says al kulam, im amar shahakul nihye bidvaro yatsa. Basically, the question is, does kulam include kulam? And if not, what might not it include?
It might not include wine or bread.
Might not include wine or bread. And there, the question basically is, how far back does it refer? Does it refer to only what we're calling Mishnah Bet, when it says kulam? Or, since the whole perek is really one unit, does kulam refer back to kulam? Everything mentioned, even in what we're calling Mishnah Aleph. And that's the question we'll see that the Gemara and the Rishonim discuss. Okay. The last matter, what central aspect of the creation story is clear, reflecting the word Shakol Nihyeh Bidvaro, right? Simply because everything was created, Bidvaro, according to the creation story, it was done Bidibor, through speech, and that's what the Bracha represents. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. We can go on, right? So now we get to the Gemara. That's a Gemara that's tremendously important, halacha lemaaseh. Especially these days when all different types of health magazines are promoting the importance of eating blueberries. Antioxidants. You have to know what bracha to say over your antioxidants. So, the Gemara's brachot, mem amud aleph at the very bottom of Rav Steinsaltz's page. Right? And the Gemara says, Heicha mivarchinan, right? Where do we bless? Mivarchinan is a contraction of mivarchin anan. Bless we becomes one word, mivarchinan. Heicha mivarchinan borei pri ha'etz. In other words, what's the definition of eitz, where do we bless break pre eitz? And the answer is, heicha, where, dechi, that when, shaklat, take, lay, take it, and here we have a double object, take it, the pre, and notice in Aramaic, the direct object is introduced by a lamed. It's in Hebrew, a lamed introducing an object would make it an indirect object. For example, sit on the chair. Sit on the chair is a indirect object because it has a preposition there. But in Aramaic, even a direct object, it is introduced very often by a preposition. Shak lat le lefere, took it the fruit. I should be more careful, the fruits, it's plural. Took the fruits, ite, yesh, or to be more exact, yesh no, as there is, legavza. There is a gavza that remained, whatever gavza means, there's something that remains after you take the fruit, v'hadar mapek, that returns, gives forth. There's something that returns and gives forth. In other words, it stays, returns, and next year gives forth more fruit. That's eight. Aval heicha dechi shaklat le lefere, where that when you take it, the fruit, leite,
it doesn't have a stem.
There isn't a gavza, right? There isn't a stem, or whatever gavza means, the hadar, that returns mapik, that returns producing fruit. Lo mivrchinan alei, we don't bless upon it brei priya eitz, ela brei priya dama. That's the rule, and much has been written about these three lines of Gemara we just read, and we'll see in Rashi, Tosfot, and the Rosh different opinions. So we go back to the previous page to the Rashi, and Rashi explained what is gavza. So we've gone back to where my finger is, the previous page. And Rashi says that gavza is ha'anaf shel eitz, the branch of tree. Perhaps it means branch, perhaps it means trunk, but it does seem to mean something woody that you can see. That's pretty clear. Okay. And then Rashi just explains, mepik, bring forth, it means pere achrini, other fruits, that something remains, some woody stem
keeps
or trunk,
remains,
keeps on growing every year. Right. So then Tosfot tells us in the Dibur Matrid, Ete Lagavze Bahadar Ate, and Amiram pointed out to me that Tosfot is a different girsa than our Gemara. Our Gemara has Ete Lagavze Bahadar Mapek, whereas instead of the word Mapek, Tosfot has Ate. It means the same thing. Ate means comes, the come forth. But he did have a different girsa, because again, the Dibur Matril, Tosfos only quoting the Gemara, it's quoting a different Gemara than one we have. Does it make a big difference? No, but it shows us there are different texts.
Right.
So says Tosfot, Mechacha, from here, Nira, it appears, the Tutim, Tutim are berries, I don't know which berries he means, but then he goes on to be more specific, Ufrizish, which we said are strawberries, Ubon tunish and raspberries, the chayotzeben and similar things. Tzrichim mevarech aleihen brei priyaitz. You have to say brei priyaitz. Sharei derech haitz litkayim yamim rabim, because the way of the eitz, and when he says eitz, I guess he means something woody that remains above the ground. Its way is to litkayim yamim rabim, to remain yamim rabim. When he says yamim rabim, he probably means years. Right? Sharei v'chi shakel ha'pri b'shanazo, for behold, when you take the pri b'shanazo this year, hadar ate pri botoa eitz atzmo. Returns, comes the pri on the same eitz itself. And I guess he means next year, because he used the word this year, you take it, so next year, the same eitz is there, and it gives forth peirot. So what is this eitz? At the very minimum, it's some type of woody stem that you can see. It might not have to mean the same branches, but at least the same trunk. So says Tosfot, and apparently Rashi agrees, as long as something remains above the ground that next year gives forth fruit, then it's called eitz. And so all these different berries, whether it's raspberries or blueberries, or what other type of berries are there?
Boysenberries.
So strawberries, we'll have to ask ourselves if strawberries are botanically in this category. From what I've read, there are strawberries in our day that all that remains is the root system, but not anything above the ground. It depends actually on the climate. In very cold climates, the strawberries remain as a root system, but don't remain.
Have to be replanted, strawberries?
No. Don't have to be replanted, but there might not be anything above the ground that remains. Whereas blueberries and boysenberries and raspberries, there's a bush that remains for many years, 4, 5, 6 years, I think. So even though it doesn't look like an eitz, it's an eitz, a halakhically, according to what we just read. Mm-hmm. Right. So now we're going to see a slightly different opinion, which is the Rosh, which I photostated at the bottom of the last page. And in his commentary on this Gemara, the bottom of the last page, the one that has the Tosefta at the top, on the left-hand side of the bottom, the Rosh says, and the Rosh, of course, is Rabbeinu Asher. He says, in the bracket, on the Gemara it says, Kol Devar Shoseh Perot Mishana L'Shana, anything that makes fruit from Shana to Shana, from year to year, Nikra Eitz. Anything that makes fruit from year to year is called Eitz. Aval Kol Devar Shetzarich L'Zoro, but anything that you have to L'Zoro, you have to seed it, you have to plant it, you have to replant it year to year, B'Chol Shana, that you have to replant every year, Nikra Pri Haaretz, is called Pri Haaretz. What he really means by that is Pri Adama, right? That's it. So according to the Rosh, when the Gemara says that as long as the Gabza remains from year to year and gives forth fruit, it doesn't have to be any type of woody stem. It doesn't have to be a naf, a branch, or an eitz. Even, apparently, the root system is enough. If the roots remain from year to year, doesn't have to be replanted, then that's even that is called an eitz. So my nafkamina, what's the difference? One is strawberries, right? If strawberries, at least in cold climates, I know this in Israel, in cold climates, there's very often after a snow, nothing left of the strawberries above the ground in the winter, but the root system remains and it brings forth a new strawberry bush at the end of the winter. So according to Rashi and Tosfot, that would probably be Adama, because there's no eitz left after the end of the year. But according to the Rosh, it's going to be eitz, because you don't have to replant it. You don't have to zoro mishana l'shana. So that, and that same nafkamina is going to exist for pineapples and for bananas. Both of them look like trees, but at the end of the season, the tree completely is cut down and disappears, but the roots remain. And the roots grow forth a new tree in the new season. So according to Rashi and the Tosfot, it's going to be Adama, bananas, and pineapples. Whereas according to the Rosh, it's going to be Eitz. So now we probably know who we decide by, because most people know that the halakha, the accepted halakha on pineapples and on bananas is we say Adama. That's because we hold like Rashi and the Tosfot, that what has to remain from year to year for it to be eitz is some woody stem above the ground. Bananas and pineapples don't qualify, and like I said, strawberries, at least in cold climates, don't make the grade. But again, to go back to blueberries and raspberries, apparently the bracha should be, according to the halacha, should be eitz, because something remains above the ground from year to year. Just let me add, the problem is that the minhag is not like that. The poskim hold like Rashi and Tosfot that anything that remains above the ground makes it into eitz, and therefore the bracha on all these berries except for strawberries should be eitz. But the minhag is not like that, so I photostated from one of these books, the art scroll book, The Laws of Brachot, and he says we have a problem here. The halakha for the berries is eitz, the minhag is adama, so we have a problem. I won't give you all the solutions he gives. Steve.
So I think my question was, did either of these guys know what a pineapple banana tree was?
I doubt it.
Does it make any difference?
I doubt it. But again, we said Tosfot does know berries.
Right.
In the cold climates of France, I guess they have blueberries and things.
Tutim are berries in general.
So the place?
Tutim are just are berries in general.
Yeah.
But don't bananas grow on a tree year to year?
Tutsadeh in Hebrew, in the modern Hebrew, is strawberry.
In fresh bananas.
I don't know.
No.
But when Tosfot uses the word tutim, he seems to be referring to a specific type of tutim.
Because it will grow back from the root.
It grows back.
From the root.
Tosfot said,
there's no remaining tree above that.
And strawberries and raspberries. So apparently, unless it's a typo, he's thinking of a certain type.
But I think that, I believe, but I'm not certain, that if it gets cold, that's because it was in your house, maybe.
Yeah.
But I think that if it was outside, it grows better if you're harvesting it to cut it off at the ground.
Cut it off at the ground.
I think that's the normal practice of farming.
A fresh tree comes up.
Which you're talking about? Which type?
Bananas.
Bananas. Bananas, yeah.
I got from the internet all different type of explanations of how bananas grow here.
Oh.
You can see exactly what they're called scientifically. Bananas and pineapples. Pineapples are called bromelides. If that is interesting to anyone.
In French.
No.
Is it similar to banana tree that pineapple? I think of pineapple as a bush. Is it a tree that it grows on? But it does it. Go away?
Yes,
down
it goes
to
away.
The roots after the season, and then the new tree or whatever.
That's
it is.
What I got off the internet a few years ago.
Pineapple.
I think of pineapples as being harvested low to the ground, being picked low to the ground. So that's why I think of it as I don't know.
Do they hang off the green part of the pineapple that you don't eat? Is that hanging down or is it growing up?
It has a big flower that grows up.
Okay, that's for some other time. They have a picture here.
The business end of the pineapple that you're actually going to eat is the pineapple's upside down. Like this is the part that you eat. This is on top, and
it's standing up on the.
Oh,
I think it's hanging.
Well, right. My picture says bananas grow upside down.
Oh, it's hanging.
Yeah, the bananas seem to grow upside down.
Upside down, yeah.
They must be dizzy.
Full of misconception.
Okay, here we go. So, that's it. That's it for that very famous machloket. And now we can go on to the Tosefta.
Tosefta. Last page.
The last page here. Very interesting Tosefta. This is Tosefta Masechet Brachot Perek Dalet. And we are in number 4 and number 5 of Tosefta, Dalet and Hey. Rabbi Meir Omer, Afilu Ra'a Et Hapat, Va'amar Baruch Asher Bara Et Hapat Zo, Kamahi Na'a Zo Birchata. Amazing. So Rabbi Meir says, even if he saw pot, bread, and he said, Baruch, blessed is he that created this bread. How beautiful it is. Zo birchata. That's its blessing.
It's a good blessing.
Yeah. And then he goes on to say, V'amar, I'm sorry, I skipped a little bit. Ra'a et atenim, I'll skip the material in parentheses. That's a different kirsa. Ra'at atenim, he saw the figs. V'amar, and he said, Baruch shabarat atenim halalu. Blessed is he who created these figs. Kama na'inhen, how beautiful they are. Zo birchatan, that's their blessing.
A good blessing.
So let's think exactly what's going on here. First of all, we have to ask ourselves, is what's written here the exact words that this person said? Or is there here a certain ellipticism, if that's a good English expression? You think any words are missing from what he said?
Well, I think he's just giving an example.
Is the example that's written exactly what he said?
You wonder if he really meant, if you start Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu, and end with these words.
Right.
Or if this is enough all on its own.
Right. That's the question. And the answer probably is David's first answer. He did say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, because in many places we're told that any bracha that's missing, Sheinu Malchut, God's name, and the word malchut in the sense of melech, ein zo bracha, it's not a bracha at all. So what he said is, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Asher bara et hapat hazo. who created this spread or created these tainim. And then he added, kama hina'a, how beautiful this bread is. That's the bracha. So he has Shem and he has Malchut, but he doesn't have the exact words that Hachamim instituted. Mm-hmm. He made it up himself. Now we have to notice, is this lahatchila or b'diavad?
Is the when he said how beautiful this is, was he talking about the bread or the blessing?
The bread.
Okay.
That's part of the blessing.
That's part of the blessing.
Not Rabbi Meir's commentary on the blessing.
Oh, okay. I thought he was saying...
Right, and Mr. Gala says b'diavad. He's 100% right. It says, ra'ah, he saw, the amar, and he said. If he saw and he said, then, b'diavad, after the fact, we say, zol birchata, that's its blessing, and that's fine. But we're never telling you that before you eat bread, or before you eat tainim, you can say such a blessing as this. You can't. You shouldn't. You're not allowed. But if you did, then b'diavad yatsa. So we have to ask ourselves, what is Rabbi Meir's principle? Why does he allow us to
change the name?
To change. And again, lahatchila he doesn't allow, but b'diavad, after the fact, it's okay. So what type of principles can we bring up to understand Rabbi Meir?
If you're in a hurry, you know, you say the blessing like that, you're okay. That's,
but why?
It's beautiful.
Why?
Could he hold that it's a Torah mitzvah that's broader than specific words?
Ah, right. We can go in that direction. It's not a Torah mitzvah. There's no mitzvah d'oraita. Say a bracha rishona, only bracha achona. Remember, v'chalta v'savat uveirachta, that's bracha achona. But when we think of the takana of hachamim, that we have to say brachot over foods, berkot aneni, we can understand in one of two ways. We can say that hachamim instituted that for bread we say X, and that for wine, yain we say Y, and for tainim we say X. And it's a takana of one shot. That was their takana. I have to say this bracha over this particular food. And if that's the only takana, then we might come to conclusion. If you don't say what they instituted, lo yatsa. Right? But we could say, like David said, we could say there are two stages. Hachamim instituted that you have to say a bracha over what you eat before you eat it. And secondly, they instituted what you have to say. If you divide into those two stages, you can say that if you fulfilled the first stage of saying a bracha, but you didn't do it the way they said, second stage, then perhaps it's legitimate to understand that yatsa, because you did do what they first instituted, which is to say a bracha before you eat. That's certainly a possibility.
And you would think, just from the disagreements we read of the text,
that fits. It could be, or it could be something else. You can say that, according to Rabbi Meir, Hachamim instituted the law of B'diavad as a clause in their legislation. In other words, they instituted that you have to say Ruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz. But they also instituted as a second level that if you say any other bracha, then yatsa. And of course they probably limited. You can't say a bracha that's not relevant. You can't say, you know, geffen over bread. But if you said something that's relevant, then...
Well, Rabbi Meir is very lenient. The other guy, Rabbi Yossi, he's tougher.
Right. There's only one other thing. There could be a third possibility. The first possibility was said the bracha, the takana two levels. One, you have to say brachot. Number two, specific brachot. Second possibility was you have to say a specific brachot, but the takana is a second level, that if you say a non-specific bracha, yatsa b'diavad. A third possibility is that no, none of this stuff we just said. Hachamim perhaps just made one takana, you have to say a specific bracha over what you eat. And if not, you didn't fulfill anything, However, Chachamim were so sensitive to the issue of taking God's name in vain that even though, in a certain sense, lo yatsa, they don't allow you to fix it because you can't say too many brachot. Right? So that's even a third way of looking at it. Okay. In any case, whichever way we look at it, one, two, or three, as Mr. Gala just said, Rabbi Meir's opinion is not the only opinion. Because there are those who disagree,
Rabbi Yossi.
Right. Rabbi Yossi Omer.
He is against it.
Kol ha-mishaneh mi-matbeya she-tavu ha-chamim bevracha lo yatsa. Anyone who changes the matbeya, the coinage, she-tavu, that coined ha-chamim bevracha concerning the bracha, lo yatsa.
What is the
reish?
Does that come from the Shorosh?
That simply... First of all, I don't know exactly because I would have to read the introduction to the editor's introduction, how he did it, but usually he brings in parentheses any words that were in the manuscript, even if they're clearly mistakes. He doesn't take them out, but he puts in parentheses to indicate that you probably shouldn't read it.
Mm-hmm. The Shorosh of Matveya is Teva, right?
Teva.
Teva, yeah.
Right. So I'll just say parenthetically that the old way until about 1940 of editing manuscripts was that the editor would give you what he thought was the good text at the top. He would basically change the manuscript based on his understanding of what is correct, and he'd indicate at the bottom the changes he made. The more recent way of editing these texts is to give you exactly what the manuscript says on the top, even if it's clearly wrong, but to present it as it is. Mm-hmm. But to put in parentheses those things which are quote-unquote clearly wrong, but to leave them there, not to tamper. So we have to understand Rabbi Yossi now. So Rabbi Yossi says, anyone who changes the matbeya that Chachamim coined, lo yatsa yedei chova. And we'll have to understand Rabbi Yossi, we'll have to understand two things in Rabbi Yossi. How far does he go? And number two, we'll have to understand Rav Yossi in light of the three ways we had of understanding Rav Meir, and that's because he objects on all three levels, so let's go and do it. How far does Rav Yossi go? We could say he goes all the way. Anyone who doesn't say exactly what Hakamim instituted, lo yatsa. But that would mean that he might disagree with our Mishnah. Right? Does he disagree with our Mishnah that says you can say Adama over eights and Bedivat yatsa?
Yeah.
He could disagree. It's possible he disagrees. It's possible. It's also possible he doesn't disagree, that he agrees. And then it would be that what he means is anyone who changes the matbeya that Chachamim created and make their own matbeya, lo yatsa. But if he says a matbeya that Chachamim created, even though he says it in the wrong place, right, as long as it fits botanically, then yatsa. So if I say Adama over apples, I didn't create a matbeya. I just used the wrong matbeya, so perhaps yatsa, according to Rabbi Yossi, or perhaps not. I have to understand what he meant. And if I say shahakol, then again, I'm saying a matbeya that Chachamim created, so perhaps he agrees with yatsa, or perhaps he doesn't agree. That's not clear what he has in mind. Yeah. Okay?
If from the context you would think that from the it has context, to do with creation of the new.
Right, from the context. Although the problem is always that it's impossible to know if Rabbi Yossi said what he said in this context or the editor just put it in this context.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's always impossible to know. Almost impossible to know the answer to that question. Okay, so we have a few minutes left. Why don't we try and finish the Gemara that deals with this Tosefta, which I guess no one saw in Charuta, but we'll do it ourselves.
Are you going to read Rabbi Yehuda?
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol Shenishtana Mibriato Veshina Birkato Yatsa. Rabbi Yehuda says, it's not clear what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Rabbi Yehuda perhaps is saying that anything that's changed from its creation, and therefore you change the bracha yatsa. What does that mean? It's not clear. Anything that's changed from its creation and you therefore change the bracha yatsa. So Professor Lieberman, who edited this text at the bottom, has a note, and he says it means that a human being changed the form of the fruit. In other words, you made applesauce from apples, or you made guacamole from avocados. If you changed it from its briah, and as a result of that you decided the bracha has to be changed, then yatsa. What does that mean? Perhaps it means that you said charcoal over applesauce, or you said charcoal over guacamole over peanut butter. It's not clear exactly what Rabbi Yehuda is saying.
Can you just say again how you would translate his words?
All that is changed from its creation. Mishtana is a passive verb. Everything that is changed from its creation. And the editor understands this means that you went and changed the fruit, the form of the fruit. Professor Lieberman understands Rabbi Yehuda is not related to the machloket we just had of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. It's a new subject. It's a new principle. Okay. So now we're going to try and just turn back one page. It's the Gemara over here, where my finger is. Mem Amud Bet. Okay. Va'al kulam imamar shakol v'chulei. That's the last line of our Mishnah that says, over everything, if you said shahakol yatsa. Right? And it includes eitz and adama. And we said, if it goes back to the previous Mishnah, it might even include other things besides eitz and adama, like yayin and bread. In other words, can you say over yayin shakol? Of course you shouldn't. La'atchila, no. But b'diavad, if you said over your yayin shakol, does the Mishnah mean to say yatsa? Or does it mean not to relate to bread and yayin, but only to eitz and adama? That's the question that we're going to discuss right now. Itmar, it was said. Rav Huna Amar. Rav Huna is a Amora of the Gemara. He's coming after the period of the Mishnah, after the period of the Tanaim. He's in Bavel, and he says, Chutz min apat min hayayin. Except for the pot and the yayin. In other words, he's claiming that when the Mishnah said that over everything, if b'diavad you said shakol yatsa, he says, Rav Huna says, no, that doesn't include pot v'yayin. You hear what I'm saying? Rabbi Yochanan Amar afilu pat v'yayin. Rabbi Yochanan says it includes even pat v'yayin. Everything. If b'diavad you said shakol yatsa, we can understand the machloket, right? Because on the one hand, the word shakol do describe even pat v'yayin. On the other hand, Hachamim specifically singled them out for a bracha that describes exactly what they are. And you're missing out on that differentiation when you say shakol, and perhaps that differentiation is necessary to be yotzei yedei chovah. So the Gemara says, neima kitanai, which literally means neima, we will say, kitanai. It's like tanai. Tanai means a tanidik machloket. A tanidik machloket. In other words, let's hypothesize that the machloket between Rav Huna and Rabbi Yochanan actually follows the lines of an earlier machloket from the time of the Tanaim. Let's see if that's true. Okay? And what the Gemara does, it brings the machloket that we just saw in the Tosefta. And it says perhaps the machloket between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir is the exact same machloket we have here between Rav Huna and Rabbi Yochanan. And we'll read it inside. Here we go. It's in the third line of the Gemara, where the little bet is as a footnote. Ra'a pat v'amar, he saw pat and said, Kamana'a pat zo baruch hamakom shabara. How beautiful is this pat, blessed God that created it, yatsa. And that seems to be our Tosefta. It's different language, but it's the same thing. That's the opinion of Rabbi Meir, that yatsa. Ra'a te'ina v'amar, he saw a te'ina, he saw a fig, and he said, Kamana'a te'ina zo baruch hamakom shabara. How beautiful is this fig. Yeah. Blessed is God that created it, yatsa. That's Divrei Rabbi Meir. As our Tosefta said, that's Rabbi Meir's position. Rabbi Yossi Omer, but Rabbi Yossi says, Kol HaMishanem Imatbeya Shetavu HaChamim Bivrachot Lo Yatsa Yadei Chovato. Anyone who changed the bracha, Lo Yatsa Yadei Chovato. That's the end of the Tosefta. And concerning that Tosefta, the Gemara says, Neima Rav Huna Dama K'Rabbi Yossi V'Rabbi Yochanan Dama K'Rabbi Meir. Neima, which means we will say, let's say, let's hypothesize, that Rav Huna, remember what Rav Huna said? He said, Shakol doesn't cover yayin and pot. Let's say that Rav Huna, that he said like Rabbi Yossi, let's say he's taking the same position as Rabbi Yossi, who said that everyone who changes the matbeya that Hachamim created, lo yatsa yedei chova, and Rabbi Yochanan demarker Rabbi Meir. And let's say that Rabbi Yochanan, that he said like Rabbi Meir. Now let's think about this. This is complicated. It's not easy. It's not easy. Because it's not intuitively simple. But let's try it out. So we'll do it again. We'll think of the Tosefta. The Tosefta says, and let's start the way that they start. They start with Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi said, if you change the matbeya, lo yatsa. Lo yatsa. And we're hypothesizing that's the basis for Rav Huna's position. What's Rav Huna's position? That if you said shakol and anything, yatsa, with the exception of pot and yayin. So let's think a minute. So we're saying that Rabbi Yossi does allow the saying of shakol b'diavad for eitz and adama, but doesn't allow it for pot v'yayin b'diavad. So it would mean that anyone who changed the matbeya shetavu achamim lo yatsa, it would mean that whenever you use a matbeya that is not, it's really difficult here. It's really hard to see where the Gemara is going, but you'd have to make something artificial up that goes something like this, that Rabbi Yossi is saying that if you use the bracha that's not, so I have to say it like this. If you use the bracha in a place where Chazal wanted a specific bracha, if you use a non-specific bracha, lo yatsa.
He can't even say that, really. Because the eitz and hadama are specific compared to hakol.
Yeah, but the thing is, so you have to tailor make understanding of what he meant to the position the rabbi, the Gemara is attributing to him. In other words, where Hachamim instituted a bracha that's only for that particular type, which is yayin and pot, there is what he meant to say, that lo yatsa. And then, of course, if you make up your own bracha, kamana'a tenazo lo yatsa. Don't worry, this is only the Gemara's Hachamim. The Gemara is going to retract this position, but we have to make some sense of it. So that's what we're saying, is that what Rabbi Yossi said, if you take a case in which Hachamim meant to make, to be very specific, and you're less specific, lo yatsa, and also if you make something up that doesn't exist at all, whereas when we have the position of Rabbi Meir that says, if you say, how beautiful is this fig, yatsa, then of course, if you say shakol for pot and yayin, yatsa. Okay, that's the suggestion of the Gemara, but the Gemara immediately retracts that. And the Gemara says, Amar lach Rav Huna. Everyone see the place? Amar lach Rav Huna in the Gemara? Now, whenever the Gemara says, Amar lach X, it always means the same thing. I have to explain. It's a technical phrase. It doesn't mean that Rav Huna said to you. It means that Rav Huna is dead. But had Rav Huna been here, he could have said. The expression Amar Lach X means that X could have said were he here, but he's not here. It's always a hypothetical construct. And even though we just said that we could suppose that Rav Huna is only holding like the position of Rabbi Yossi, Rav Huna could have said, no, I'm holding even like Rabbi Meir. Even though I say that you can't say shakol on pat v'yayin, but I'm saying that I'm holding that position even though we can hold like Rabbi Meir in the Tosefta, Rabbi Meir who said, just keep your heads focused here, that Rabbi Meir had said, even if you say the bracha, you make up your own bracha, it works, but still pat v'yayin, you can't say shakol, how could it be? Let's read. Amar lach Rav Huna, Rav Huna could say, ana da'amri afilu k'Rabbi Meir, I, that I say, even like Rabbi Meir, you can't make your own bracha. I'm sorry, you can make up your own bracha, but pat v'yayin, you can't say shakol, and explains. Ad kan lo kama Rabbi Meir hatam, until this point, didn't say Rabbi Meir over there, elaheicha deka madkash me depat. Rather, heicha where, deka madkar, that he mentions shme depat, the name of pat. In other words, Rabbi Meir said, you can make it beyond bracha, but you have to mention the name of pat. You have to say pat over pat. Aval heicha deloka madkash me depat, but where that he didn't mention the name of pat, afilu Rabbi Meir modeh, even Rabbi Meir agrees that it doesn't work. So Rabbi Meir is very, very liberal. You can make up your own bracha, but you have to be specific when you say a bracha over something that Hazal wanted to you to be specific. Over bread, they wanted you to be specific. So even if you make up your own bracha, as long as you were specific and you said bread, fine. But if you just said charcoal over bread, no, Hazal wants you to be specific. So it turns out that says Rav Huna, we're making up, we're hypothesizing for Rav Huna, he can even hold not just like Rabbi Yossi, he can even hold like Rabbi Meir and still say, Lo Yetzach, you said Shakol. And now the other side of the coin. The Rabbi Yochanan Amarlach, and Rabbi Yochanan Amarlach, remember Amarlach always means hypothetical. Rabbi Yochanan is dead. But Rabbi Yochanan could claim that his opinion that says that you can say Shakol even over bread, and he can claim that works even according to Rabbi Yossi in the Tosefta, Rabbi Yossi that said, you can't ever change, but I can claim that Shakol does work over bread and yayim. And you can imagine what he's going to say. Rabbi Yossi is going to say,
I didn't change anything.
I didn't change. I did what Chazal created. I didn't do it in the right place, but I didn't make up my own. So we just read on. Ana da amre yafilu le Rabbi Yossi. I, that I'm saying, even according to Rabbi Yossi, ad kan lo kama Rabbi Yossi atam, over there, didn't say Rabbi Yossi, I'm saying, until here, didn't say Rabbi Yossi over there, elimishum de kama bracha de lo tikina rabbanan, because she said a bracha that didn't institute the rabbanan. You make up your own, of course, lo yatsa. Aval, amar shakul niyedbro de takina rabbanan, but if you said shakul niyedbro that rabbanan did institute, even if you said it over something like bread v'yayin, afilu Rabbi Yossi modev, and Rabbi Yossi would agree that yatsa. So you probably have to go over it again at home to make sure that everything comes together. But we have here two different theories of how to understand the meaning, the deeper meaning of the machloket in the Tosafot, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. Yeah. That's all. I'm not going to flesh it out more. We can spend 10 more minutes on it. Perhaps do it at home, fleshing out what the theoretical underpinnings of each position are. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.